This is Digital Story Podcast number 954, July 2nd, 2024. Today's theme is How Mega Tank Printers Are Changing Everything. I'm Derek Story. When my aging all-in-one Canon printer rattled out its final 5x7, I began shopping for a replacement. There are many options in this category, but I wanted to take advantage of the latest innovations. That's when I discovered that Megatank printers were becoming viable for cost-conscious photographers. I opted for a 6-ink Canon PIXMA G620, and oh my, how things have changed. Find out how on today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. So as many of you know, my dedicated photo printer is the venerable Canon Pro 100. And it's been around for a while. It really has. But it still makes fantastic prints. But I thought it would be a good foil for the younger brother, the newer sibling, whatever you want to call it, the Canon G620 that I'm going to be talking about today. So let's go back to the Canon Pro 100 for a minute, just to give you an idea of how much things have changed. The Pro 100 has 8 ink cartridges, each with 13 milliliters of fluid. A full replacement set costs $120. Based on the reporting of other photographers, ink costs per 4x6 inch print is about 50 cents per. I'm guessing a little bit less than that. I saw those numbers, and I would put it more, for me anyway, around 35 to 40 cents. But anyway, somewhere in there. Let's put it that way. These things are hard to measure exactly. Now, the Pro 100 produces lovely prints, and it has served me well for years. So that's my photo printer right now, and it will remain my photo printer because what I had to replace was the everyday printer, you know, the all-in-one, the one that has a scanner, the one that can put out 8.5x11-inch documents quickly, you know, the one that can do all that stuff. That's the printer that needed to be replaced. Now, the Canon printer that I had, my previous all-in-one, went for a long time, and, you know, you use it a lot. The big photo printer, the 13-inch, you know, the Pro 100, oh, I fire that up probably once a week or so, whereas the little multi-purpose, multi-function printer, I'm using that all the time. I use that every day. But I thought it'd be interesting to compare the two printers because so much has changed. So let's go to the Canon PIXMA G620 printer, the one that I replaced that poor little guy that just couldn't do it anymore. So it's a 6-ink printer, and it has user-replaceable printheads, which I think are really cool. If your printhead goes bad, you can just snap out the old one and snap in a new one. And I just think that is so cool. And in fact, when you get the printer in the box, the printheads aren't loaded in the printer. They're in another little box, and you have to go ahead and put them in the first time, which just shows you how easy it is to change the print heads. All right, so anyway, it has user-replaceable print heads. And it is refueled, though, with 57 milliliter ink bottles that cost $15 each. $90 for a complete set that can output approximately 3,800 4x6 prints at about 2.5 cents each. That's right, 2.5 cents each for ink costs. One Canon GI23 bottle of ink contains more fluid than four Canon CLI 42 cartridges for the Canon Pro 100, and they sell for $17 each. So the bottle of ink is $15, the cartridges are $17, and that bottle of ink holds more fluid than four cartridges. That's why I did the picture that I did for the show notes showing 4 ink cartridges for the Pro 100 and 1 ink bottle for the G620. Those 4 cartridges can't even fill up that ink bottle. There's still more room left. A huge price difference. So what are we giving up to have these cost savings? Quality? Longevity? So I decided to look into that as well. Both printers are dye-based printers. The ChromaLife 100 System 3 ink for the G620 protects your photos from fading up to 100 years in a photo album, 30 years behind glass, and that's light fastness, or 20 years without the glass, and that is gas fastness, approximately the same as the prints from the Pro 100. So when I dug a little deeper onto print longevity between the two, both of them were rating the prints stored in albums at 100 years. The Pro 100 was saying 50 years for prints behind glass, piecing together different sources. Canon says for the G620, 30 years behind glass for the prints. I don't know. What I do know is that all of that is a long time. And we're just talking about color prints. We're not even talking about black and white prints, okay? By the way, of the 6 ink bays that you have for the G620, one of them is a gray ink, and then it has a photo black ink, and then they've added a red ink, and then, of course, they have the usual magenta, yellow, and cyan. So that extra red, or that red that they've included along with the gray to go with the black, that is part of what gives you fantastic photo prints. And of course, then the technology, right, the software to manipulate those inks into great prints. So the lasting power, the staying power of those prints with both printers is pretty good. It still feels like the edge goes to the Pro 100, but then again, it is a dedicated photo printer, not a multifunction printer that you just have sitting on your desk. So the Canon G620 is developing an interesting reputation among reviewers. Across the board, they agree that the photo output is amazing, worthy of serious enthusiast photographers. And that was reviewer after reviewer after reviewer, so much so that I had to test the photos for myself right away. I mean, that was like the first thing, even before I did documents and stuff, just to see what they were talking about. And indeed, they were right. The photos that come out of this on Red River paper were just absolutely beautiful. But as a multifunctional device, which it is at the end of the day, that's the category it's competing in, it has shortcomings compared to the competition. It has slower print output, slower page output, no duplex printing, no automatic document feeder, and a very basic LCD panel. Surprisingly basic, actually, for such a modern printer. And I agree with all of these nits. However, I will say that my primary concern as a photographer is the photo printing. Yes, I have to do documents. I print labels for the film camera shops, shipping labels, all that. But those are just black ink documents, one pages. You know, whether it takes, you know, 3 seconds to come out or 8 seconds to come out, I don't really care, you know, on that sort of thing. But what I really do want is not having to fire up the Pro 100 every time I want to make a nice photo print up to 8.5 by 14 inches. That's what I want, and that's what the G620 gives me. Now, I will say, when I was testing the photo prints on this, I was surprised by how slow it printed. I did a photo print on high quality or highest quality. It was printing. I heard it working. It was just a 5x7. And after a little bit, I was like going, wow, is the paper stuck? You know, I was kind of like looking in there, trying to see if anything was happening. And then I was going to start playing around, with the print dialog box and, all this kind of stuff. And I said, no, let's just let it play out. And sure enough, then it did emerge. It was a beautiful print, but it took much longer than I was used to waiting with the Pro 100. So this is not a speedy printer by any stretch of the imagination. However, what does come out of there looks absolutely beautiful. By the way, some other features that you get with this, it has Wi-Fi. Of course, you would expect that. The Canon Print app for my iPhone works really well with the printer. So I can set up jobs. I can print from my camera roll in the iPhone. I can do all that sort of stuff directly from the iPhone, and it works, very, very well. So I love having that flexibility. The printer is on my network, so regardless of which Mac I'm sitting at, I can send a print job to it. You would expect that for this type of printer. The scanner is very good. The copy function works very well. All of the stuff that you want from a multi-function printer works well. It's just that if you like having that big colorful LCD screen like you get on some of the other printers, or if you need speed, then this is not the printer that fits those bills. If you want really good photographs coming out of your multifunction printer, then this is quite good, quite good. Now, all that being said, there is one drawback for Mac users. And it's not that the driver isn't updated or any of that kind of stuff. You can, in fact, use the latest Mac operating system with this printer, no problem. And it supports the older operating system. It does all of that stuff. But what it does for the Mac, the driver uses Apple's AirPrint driver for the Mac. How is that an issue? Well, it's an issue if you want to use ICC profiles, because you can't use ICC profiles, and those are profiles designed specifically for the printer in a specific surface of paper. You can't use those if you're on a Mac, because the Canon printer is driven by AirPrint on a Mac. Now, if you use a Windows machine, then you can use ICC profiles with the Canon G620. And in fact, Red River Paper has published a set of ICC profiles for this printer. So if you're on Windows and you want ICC profiles, you're in great shape. You can go download them from Red River Paper, and off to the races you go. At first, I was bummed by this when this first came up in my research. I was going, I don't use ICC profiles that much, but sometimes I like to be able to. So I said, all right, let me just go ahead and do some prints using the system that they have developed, the driver for the Mac, and see how they come out. So I did all the other parameters like you're supposed to, set the proper surface, the proper paper surface. And of course, you get a whole list of, you get luster, glossy, matte, all that good stuff. So selected the proper paper surface, selected the quality of print I want, is it draft, is it good, is it best, that kind of thing. And then, of course, made sure that I was sending a good file to the printer. And time after time again, the images turned out fantastic. So much so that I'm going, well, I hate to admit it, but I don't really need ICC profiles with this printer. Now, if this were my big 13-inch serious photo printer, that I would make, big prints with, that would be more of an issue, because I do want the option to use ICC profiles like I do with the Canon Pro 100. However, this printer prints so well using the driver that it has right now that I'm going, for my everyday stuff, for 4x6 prints, 5x7s, greeting cards, the occasional 8.5x11 print, all that kind of stuff, it does fantastic. It does fantastic. So I'm going, okay, I just have to get over this in my head, because this this is more of a head thing than anything else, because what's coming out of the printer is great, so just let go of it. Let go of it. It's a multifunction printer. Let go of it and just enjoy the good prints. But I need to let you know about that, because if you think, wow, this $250 printer, this $249 printer, sounds too good to be true. It does have, if you're a Mac user, this one issue for serious enthusiast photographers. That may or may not be an issue once you start printing with it, but you need to know about it ahead of time. And now you know. Now you know. So the bottom line is, for my multifunctional printer, I am tickled pink. I really am. Using these 57 milliliter ink bottles to refuel the tanks. And by the way, you can see on the front of the printer how full each tank is. It has translucent plastic there so you can see into the tank. You don't even have to go to the printer dialog box to see that. Just, you know, squeezing an entire bottle of ink into this thing, knowing that you're going to be printing for a long, long, long time with that $15 bottle of ink. That is a game changer. I mean, that really does change everything. And the fact that you can get photo quality stuff out of this, the fact that it has a good long display life, you know, and then it has all the conveniences of, you know, Wi-Fi, scanner, copy function, all that good stuff. Just like everything else, it feels like our world is getting better every year. I'm thrilled with the G620. It's not a printer for everyone, but it is a printer for a lot of people who listen to this podcast. Of course, I have a link to it in the show notes. You can go and check out all the detail there. I encourage you to do so if you're in the market for a multifunction printer that also prints very nice 4x6, 5x7, 8.5x11, and 8.5x14 prints, plus greeting cards and all the other good stuff. Japan's Olympic athletes will wear outfits designed to block infrared cameras. I saw this article on The Verge, and I have a link to it in the show notes, and it was fascinating to me. I'm just coming off an IR workshop. I've been thinking a lot about infrared photography, but I never thought about this that I'm going to read you right now. Let's see what The Verge has to say. At the 2024 Paris Summer Olympics, Le Monde reports that athletes on Japan's volleyball, track and field, and other teams will be competing in outfits made from a new fabric that can better absorb infrared light. Similar to the stealth aircraft that avoid detection by deflecting radar signals away from detectors, the fabric absorbs and prevents infrared light from reaching cameras and infrared sensors. Some devices have unintentionally demonstrated how the infrared sensing used in night vision goggles and thermal cameras can reveal the unseen, like the OnePlus 8 Pro's photochrome color filter that worked like X-ray vision on the thin shell of an Apple TV. When used on people, infrared photography can reveal the lines of a person's body or the undergarments they're wearing beneath a thin layer of clothing, such as those worn by athletes. In 2020, athletes complained to the Japanese Olympic Committee after discovering infrared camera photos of themselves shared on social media with sexually explicit captions, according to the Japan Times. Since then, Japanese organizers have developed a new fabric that's stretchable enough to be used in athletic uniforms while also protecting athletes. In experiments shared by them, a printed black sea beneath a layer game uniform fabric and the new infrared absorbing fabric is nearly entirely obscured when photographed with an infrared camera. Multiple layers of the new light absorbing fabric would help more, but with athletes already expressing concerns about the extreme heat expected in the upcoming Paris Olympic Games, the uniforms need to strike a balance between protecting against invasive creeps while keeping participants cool and comfortable. Oh my gosh. I mean, this is the stuff that I just hate. not the protection that they're coming up with, but people who would actually do this, who would actually do what they're talking about, photographing these athletes in such a way that they could be shared on social with sexually explicit captions. Oh my gosh, come on. The fact that they had to go to all this trouble to develop this fabric to protect their athletes from creepy people, from creepy photographers. I hate that stuff. I really do. So I'm glad they have appeared to come up with a solution. I'm looking at a graphic here that shows how the new infrared fabric can block IR imaging for these athletes and protect them and only reveal what is on the outside of their uni, not on the inside. Nikon announces a $600 Z 35mm f1.4. Its first f1.4 for Z mount. And this is on dpreview.com, and I have a link in the show notes. I think Nikon surprised a lot of people with this optic. Not that they came out with it. We were expecting a 35mm f1.4 from them, but the fact that it came out at $599 instead of over $1,000 was very aggressive. It was very, very aggressive. Let's read what DP Review has to say. Nikon has announced the Nikkor Z 35mm f1.4, its first f1.4 lens for the Z-mount mirrorless system. Until now, most of the company's prime lenses have been either f1.2, f1.8, or f2.8. Interestingly, the Z 35mm f1.4 is not part of the company's premium S line of lenses and is priced lower than the 35mm f1.8S, coming to market with a recommended price of $599 rather than the $849 originally asked for with the f1.8. We understand this is not an S line lens that previously appeared in Nikon's roadmap. The 415-gram, 14.7-ounce lens is 3 inches by 3.4 inches, or 75 by 87 millimeters, and accepts 62-millimeter filters. Nikon says it will be available in mid-July at the recommended price of $599. It's a nice-looking 35 f1.4 lens at a good price. And I was just wondering when I was thinking about what Nikon did here and the fact that we're seeing third-party lenses challenge the brand lenses with a very robust price-performance equation. Do you think that had any influence on this, or do you think they are just being aggressive in general? One of the reasons why I'm thinking about that is because one of my favorite lenses for the Nikon ZF right now is the Viltrox 85mm f1.8 that has a list price of $399, and it's terrific. I've been shooting with it all the time. It feels like, boy, every time I turn around, I need that focal length because I'm doing a lot of product photography with it. I'm doing various portraits, whether they're of plants, animals, or people. It just seems like every time I turn around, I want that 85mm f1.8, and it has been doing great. And the interesting thing about it is that it is half the price of the Nikon version of the 85mm f1.8 lens. So I'm not thinking that I always go for the cheaper lens. I'm thinking this more for the lenses that are in between my go-to lenses. Like, all my major lenses for the ZF are Nikon lenses. You know, I have the 26mm, I have the 28 to 400mm. Those kinds of lenses where I want a Nikon lens for that. But then there are those gap lenses, like the two Viltrox lenses I have for it are lenses that I don't use as often or don't think I'm going to use as often and end up using them more because I have them, I guess. But the 20mm f2.8, I've been using a lot more than I thought I would. And then this 85mm f1.8, I've definitely been using more than I thought I would. I was originally thinking of them as gap lenses, but when you have them, then you have the luxury of choosing whatever lens is available to you. So I'm just sort of fascinated by this whole dynamic and wondering what, if any, impact the third-party manufacturers are having on the brand manufacturers and if that's going to influence pricing. I think that $599 for this 35 millimeter f1.4 is the right price. That's the price that I think it should be. And if it came out at $899 or $999, over $1,000, then I would think that's too much and I would start looking for alternatives. But at $599, even though it's a bit more than the third-party lens, I would probably go for it because it was close enough and I'm getting a Nikon lens. You get what I'm saying here. So I think that there's a lot going on right now, and I like what's going on right now. I like good competition that sort of keeps prices in line and that gives us the option to choose a little bit better for a little bit more if we want it, or if it's a gap, to go ahead and save a little bit money for a gap lens. 35 millimeter f1.4, $599. It's a nice move by Nikon. Okay, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. Let's start out by thanking our Inner Circle members for their continued support. You know, we do the podcast once a week, and then, you know, some weeks I've got an online photo course going, and so that's great. I get to interact with other photographers then. But then the rest of the time, you know, I'm just sort of working on my stuff, and you're working on your stuff, and, you know, it can get a little photo lonely sometimes. And having our Inner Circle members commenting on stuff, bringing up topic ideas, sharing photos, all of this is sort of happening during the week, really does help with the sense of community. You know, feeling like you belong to something with people who have shared interests, and a lot of times, you know, very interesting viewpoints on things that you are interested in. And that's why I'm thanking our Inner Circle this week. I'm thanking them because not only do they help support this community in this podcast financially, they help support this community spiritually, and their enthusiasm and their sharing and their communication. Boy, some weeks I have to tell you, it is just so nice to pull up my iPhone or to go to my Mac, go to our Inner Circle space on Derek Story Online, and just see what's going on and enjoy what I find there. Thank you, Inner Circle members, for not only supporting us financially, but for just making it fun to be a photographer. And finally, I want to give a big shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. When I first started researching printers, you know, to replace my little multifunctional printer, I went to Red River Paper. And when I saw they had ICC profiles of the G620, I was going right on, right on. And because of Red River Paper, I saw that Mac users use AirPrint for the G620 instead of a regular Canon driver like they do for Windows. I would not have known that had I not gone to Red River Paper. It did not come up in any of the other reviews that I read, whether PC Mag or anywhere else. That's the kind of insight, that's the kind of stuff that you get from Red River Paper. And it's just fantastic having them as a resource for us, not only for the paper, but also for the knowledge and for the insights and for the ICC profiles and all the other good stuff. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can click on it, nose around, see what's going on, find what you're looking for. And they also have a rocking Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. And a big thanks to them for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Working on more great stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.